Ladies and gentlemen, you're live from Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet on Strathclyde Fusion!
What's happening, everybody, and welcome to this, another episode of Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet, live 14 stories high in Glasgow. WrestleMania week has been and gone, and now we move on and talk about non-WrestleMania things here at Suplex Retweet. I am your host this week, Stephen Wilson, and in the week where we had the Superstar Shake-Up, we have got the Panel Shake-Up, as we've got a few new faces, because some of our panel are in America, or in places that we should not speak. Ross. First, rumour has it that at last count he was 117th on the list of potential Bullet Club new members. It's Stephen Strachan. Strack, how's it going?
Not too bad, thanks for having us.
Yes, definitely. You looking forward to this show?
Yeah, man. I kind of watched the WCW when it started to crumble, so...
All good. Yes, absolutely. And joining us, he's been described as the butt gun of the McLeod household from the Scott and Paul Rambling podcast. It's Scott McLeod.
Alright.
How's it going?
Good. So this is where the big boys play,
huh? This is where the big boys play, yes. You have came to the big leagues tonight. Sorry. Poor time to pause. Yeah. Scott, it's nice to have you. And rounding off our panel this week, fresh from another promo beatdown from Samoa Joe, it's the Scottish big dog. It's Alan McLucas.
Alright, mate, how's it going?
Not bad, how's yourself?
I'm good, mate, I'm good.
Good, good. And finally, with a mic, even though he will say he knows barely anything about WCW's history.
Excuse me? I know what it stands for.
It's our EP, it's Kwaku Aji.
What's up, what's up?
How's it going?
Not bad. I got to see the truth last night, so I'm happy.
Yes, and you were raging at Ross Slagdom.
I'm raging with Ross all the time, nothing's new.
Join the club. Try living with him.
Hi Ross. Hope you're listening. We love you really.
He's probably turned off by now.
Yes, so this is Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet. For anybody who's new to the podcast and would like to see what we do all the time, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We are at Suplex Retweet. So, the subject of tonight's show, for anybody familiar with our past, back in December time, we tried to do this show, which was around about the demise of WCW, purely because it was 20 years since WCW Starrcade happened, which was meant to be the biggest moment in the company's history, which turned out to be a bit of a flop, so we thought, we'll talk about WCW for that point in time. The recording broke, and it never went to the podcast. So, for the very few people who listened to that one live, well done. But we're going to do it again! So, and obviously we couldn't get the same panel, so we've got you guys in today. So, he's looking forward to talking about the company who was meant to be the most successful of all time at that one point, and didn't become that.
They had the potential, they had a lot of potential to become the leaders, but through a lot of creative control and ideas, it kind of sunk itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was, we'll look kind of obviously about the history before we talk about the things that, we're mainly going to talk about some of the key events that led to the demise. Obviously, there's so much that could have played an impact, and maybe we might not talk about some of the main stuff, but we'll try and talk through some of the main points we've got down here. But first of all, we'll kind of talk how the companies, the history was about them before it all went wrong. Now, they were established, they were originally under the NWA banner. One of the big companies, obviously, around the time when WWF started buying out all the territories. They were eventually acquired by Ted Turner in 1988 to make sort of some sort of competitor for the WWF at the time. They split from the NWA and they gave creative control to Mr. Eric Bischoff, who would successfully try and run the company as a competitor to WWE, brought in some of the big talent. We saw Hulk Hogan, Scott Hall, Randy Savage, you name them in the 80s, they showed up in WCW at some point. Virgil, for example. But yeah, there was so much that went on, and then we eventually got the New World Order, was formed, so much happened. I mean, they were on track, they were killing WWF in the ratings. I mean, how much memories do we have of that point in time in WWE's, in terms of the start of the Monday Night Wars, essentially?
I just remember crying when Hogan turned heel. It was like, no, no. But it was, looking back, it's a spectacular thing to happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with Miz having a pop at him the other night in Raw, as well, claiming that this Mr. Ass was going to be better than the NWO, and the reaction of the crowd. It just shows how popular they still are today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was so popular. I mean, it's amazing to think that somebody could compete with WWE in the ratings, but WCW did that on a weekly basis, and some of the TV was good. I mean, WWE, was it really good at that point in time, or was it a combination of the fact WWE wasn't really on the ball? Shrek,
I think the biggest factor was the, back then the WWE had this, you almost notice a difference between 1996 and 1998. The whole look's different, the feel's different, the wrestling's different, everything's completely changed, because it seemed to be the old fashioned pale blue ring, red, white and blue ropes, and it was gimmicky, like wrestlers, the Repo Man and IRS and things like that, and WCW kind of made it a bit more realistic, mm-hmm. and that's what people thought was quite appealing. Obviously they're bringing out big stars to make it even more. They had a foundation obviously with Ric Flair, mm-hmm. But there was, the WWE had to make that change, or WCW was just going to bury them, because it was just the old style, and WCW was something new, and it was something appealing to the younger generation who watched wrestling but didn't want the stigma of it being like gimmicky. Mm-hmm. Type wrestling. They wanted something that looked real, mm-hmm. because some of the matches and some of the gear the guys wore just looked like a street fight, mm-hmm. and obviously they had new plans where to go. The Hogan heel turn was perfectly timed, mm-hmm. that's genius, they pulled the trigger at that specific point, because that's what accelerated them, because nobody had ever seen Hogan as a heel. It was always kind of, he was the good guy, he was the John Cena of the 80s. He was never done anything wrong, and then he turned heel, which was something you wouldn't even think about doing, but it just shows that a change isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about characters they love, WWE had the likes of the Repo Man, they were becoming stale, but Scott, I mean, the NWO, they were cool, you know, and I think that's what appealed to a lot of people and still appeal to them today.
Yeah, the Bullet Club get a lot of comparisons to NWO, but no, NWO was meant to be like based on a faction that Bischoff had seen in Japan, mm-hmm. and Bullet Club based in Japan, so essentially it's that concept with Bullet Club going back to how it originated,
mm-hmm.
and I'm kind of showing my age here, but when the New World Order founded, I was born a couple of months later. So
wow, I feel old.
A lot of my knowledge is going to be from like after the fact, like documentaries and stuff like that.
There's a debate going on in the studio, who is the oldest in the room?
Well, I'm 31.
Oh, thank God, I'm not the oldest.
Well, and that's my cue to leave.
Well, last week Ross was laughing at everyone because he was the baby in the room, and I quickly shut him down. It wasn't picked up on the radio, but he was quickly shut down, so don't claim you're the baby, otherwise you'd get the same shutdown.
But yeah, it was kind of like it felt fresh. I mean, it was interesting. I quite liked the idea. I mean, Alan, Eric Bischoff, how he integrated himself within the NWO. Mm. They were kind of cool, but you kind of wanted to see them get beat up at the same time. You wanted to see them go down. It was kind of that mix because of Bischoff in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when the rival NWO started, the Wolfpack as well.
Mm-hmm.
That, when you had the two set factions going head to head as well, that was fantastic to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a lot of interesting things. Obviously, WWE were not doing the same thing, and things were frailing in WWE. I mean, it kind of led towards the Montreal Screwjob in 1997. I think that was kind of like WWE were showing signs. Obviously, Austin it came about the year before. There was signs. Obviously, the things were going, but the Montreal Screwjob kind of looked like they were on the rails. And I think WCW, they had a great chance around about that point in time to really kill WWE in the water. I think it's fair to say after the Screwjob. Then, do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, that kind of started things off, because I mean, this yet again, the style for what that arena looked to the older ones, it kind of was showing that we're moving forward. And I think Vince, seeing WCW obviously were taking Hogan, Savage, Nash, Hall, Virgil, Mr. Perfect, all the old WWE guys, and try to build his own new guys, Austin, The Rock, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, even guys like Owen Hart, it was trying to build them up to make them as good as what they were. They were really, really good, really, really talented guys, which kind of, he had to showcase what he had, what he has, rather than what he had.
Yeah, yeah, totally understand. But obviously, say, Montreal Screwjob was, looked like it was going to be, WWE could have capitulated, and that's where we kind of start talking about some of the events that kind of led to the demise of WCW. It's one of the ones that really is fondly in my memory. It's one I talked about at the start of the show, that's why we did this show originally, was Starrcade in 97. Now, to many people, 1997 was, WCW were hitting the peak. This was the chance, and 1997 was the Starrcade was going to be the end of probably a feud that was 18 months in the making between Sting and Hollywood Hulk Hogan. I think it's fair to say round about that time it was up there as one of the best build-ups for a match I think has ever been in wrestling, it's fair to say. Anybody's got any thoughts on that kind of feud that these two had, that Sting had with the NWO and Hogan? You don't have any thoughts?
I don't know, I vaguely remember that pay-per-view, to be honest. I remember it.
I just remember the fact that Sting was antagonising him and didn't say a word. He didn't have to speak to wind up the NWO and get the fans on his side. And that was so enticing to see.
Yeah, it was brilliant. That was a great part about him. I mean, Sting had been that kind of colourful character in the 90s. And when the NWO had come out, he was kind of like, I'm just kind of sick of this. He got darker in terms of his character until he eventually disappeared into the shadows.
Literally
disappeared into the shadows, and he came back in that type of crow character.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think it was so good to kind of see.
Dropping down from the rafters, attacking people, just disappearing again, lights going out. Fantastic.
I mean, you kind of think about wrestling nowadays, I mean, you wouldn't really think of them taking away their star, one of their star men, for 18 months, not speaking a word. And not having a match. It's unthought of in wrestling these days, I think it's fair to say.
Last time I seen anything like it was in TNA. That was AJ Styles, Bobby Roode, James Storm, the Faction 4 or something like that they were called.
Fortune 4,
that was it. They tried that, but it just didn't work. They didn't have the pulling power the same way Sting did. Because Sting, although he wasn't speaking, the eyes said a lot. You could tell how Sting was reacting and want people to react by just looking at his eyes.
Yeah, it was the type of thing, like, it was so hot. I mean, as I said, the NWO were class is cool, but people still wanted to see them go down, and Sting was that guy. And this was anticipated to be so big for the company, this event. Starrcade 97, it was in December, it was the month after the Screwjob. They were in the perfect position to take WWE to the cleaners. It drew the largest buy rate in the company's history. It was on track. There was even the added influence. Bret Hart as well was an added point that was as well. This was Bret Hart's debut night on the show. I mean, guys, did you think the fact that Bret Hart had signed at that point in time maybe changed what WCW were thinking about doing?
Sorry, I think so, because what the botched finish is famous in this match. I think it's because they were trying so hard to get Bret involved and capitalise on the screw job instead of like just going with a regular like finishing culmination of the story. I think that's when the beginning of the end time, because if they just went with a regular finish, I don't think there would have been the same kind of botch. Like, apparently they even tried to get Earl Hebner to come or the M&B, the referee that did the fast count, is this continuous idea that all the old ex-WWF guys stuck together in the NWO. They couldn't get him, so that's why they had to get Nick Patrick to do it.
Could you imagine if they got Hebner over? that would be something in history, wouldn't it? We wouldn't have got so many moments in WWF, you know, with obviously the rivalry with Triple H and the DX in the early 2000s, where they did the fast count to screw Triple H. Jericho should have won that belt. That moment annoys me in history. I think Jericho should have won that belt and ran with it. But we could be here all day talking about that type of stuff with Jericho. We're here to talk about WCW. But the night came in Starrcade, and the cards before this match didn't really help things, I don't think. I mean, some of you may have not vaguely remembered this match in great detail, or the show in great detail, but I'll go over some of the matches that we got. I mean, Goldberg versus Steve McMichael. We had Bagwell versus Luger. We had a six-man tag match that features Scott Norton, Vincent, better known as Virgil, and Randy Savage taking on Ray Traylor, better known to many people as the Big Boss Man, and the Steiner Brothers. Before the main event, we also got a fantastic five-star rated match between Larry Zbysko and Eric Bischoff. where Bret Hart was the referee. Does that scream like a 5-star show to you guys?
Nope.
No.
No.
No. It's not exactly going to keep fans
was
on the seat.
Was that Meltzer rating?
Don't get me started on Meltzer ratings. He gave Nicholas 1-star.
That is, I know. How dare he?
That is a travesty.
Just listening to that card, how Goldberg, Steve McMichael didn't go on last is just the biggest travesty of that show. Forget the screwy finish. That's the biggest travesty.
I'm going to do a Dave stat. That lasted 5 minutes and 59 seconds. It was the shortest match on the card. But no, the card before it didn't really help things. Then we got to the main event, and as Scott referenced there, the screwy finish is in folklore with this match. With essentially, well, you've all got a good knowledge of wrestling. You know kind of how these things work with these kind of feuds. It leads to the face getting the win over the heel. It should not lead to the heel dominating the face for 10 minutes. But that's the type of thing Hogan goes. There's a lot of talk about Hogan using these backstage politics. There's a lot of talk about Sting being overweight and not being physically able to have a match. I mean, Strato, you could talk about Hogan all day, but...
You really don't want me to. You really, really don't want me talking about Hogan.
I do.
If this is maybe one after 9 o'clock, I can maybe speak about Hogan because I can use the language I'd like to use. But no, that's the one thing I fully contribute to WCW's demise is Hogan's... Not just Hogan, there's a lot of guys who had creative control in their contract, and that is what torpedoed a lot of the WCW, because it was like, oh, this guy wants to go over this way. Everybody wanted to be a chief, no one wanted to be an Indian. So it's like, you can't really go anywhere if everybody's refusing to lose.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much, that's going to play a big part in the show. I mean, so much of these things about creative control, that'll come up in some of the other moments we kind of talk about. But the thing I found hilarious about this finish, I mean, to anybody who doesn't know the finish to this match, Hogan wins with a leg drop. Nick Patrick counts the 1-2-3, match over, Hogan wins. Now, Bret Hart then comes in and then says, no, I'm not going to let this match end this way. Because apparently Nick Patrick was supposed to do a fast count. He had one job. One job. Yeah, it's famous now, is it? Nick Patrick did a normal count. And Bret kind of much goes like, no, Sting should not lose in such a screwy way. And it's kind of like, no, wait, Sting just lost. Fairly, this explains why he's been in the rafters for 18 months. His wrestling is absolutely gaff. But no, I mean, just describing that finish, it's understandable how fans can be really, really annoyed. It's how a lot of WWE fans felt at the end of Mania the other week, where the big dog got absolutely bloodied. Alan, you still feeling the pain? I can see the stitches on his head.
Headaches are terrible, man.
I'm surprised you even made it here today.
I always stand up for work, I ain't Lesnar.
Oh.
And if you wait till after 9 o'clock, then you hear what I think of Lesnar.
But no, I mean, fans were in perfect right to be unhappy with us, I think it's fair to say. And you'd understand if some of them maybe switched off in the months after it. I think it's fair to say, guys. What's up? Yeah. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this was the beginning of when WCW started to hinder themselves, because this is when like the poor decisions started. Like you said, like they were trying to get Hart involved in this storyline just to capitalise on the fact that he was another former Vince guy, mm-hmm. rather than just going with like maybe you can still have Hogan get a lot of offense if Sting makes this heroic comeback at the end and beats him. Mm-hmm. But then they wanted to just overbook it, and that's really the story of WCW's final year, just overbooking it just way too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, 1997 was supposed to be such a great year, but it started going downhill, and this is the point where we started to see the ratings start to drop in WWF. Obviously, they started to do the Attitude Era at this point in time, and they kind of coincided, but WCW made a big push in 1998 to try and revive those ratings, and the man that they put in the place of this one was Bill Goldberg, now WWE Hall of Famer. Congratulations to him. Shame barely any WWE superstars got to see it live, because they had to get shipped out of the room. But they positioned Goldberg, I think, as a monster face. Ran through the company. Absolutely was meant to. Went this. I mean, can anybody remember exactly the number of matches he went unbeaten?
I'm just going to guess. Is it 173? At least that's the claimed number. I don't think that's the real number, though.
What? Our resident stats men are off this week, so I'm not exactly too sure off the top of my head, but it was big streak.
Yeah, because when they drastically change it from week to week, he'd wrestled 5 matches between Nitros when he clearly hadn't.
It was 173. He'd went unbeaten before he eventually.
Well,
we'll kind of talk about that in a wee bit later on. You could get a job. Dave's on holiday. he's in New Orleans the week after WrestleMania.
I know.
You know. A brief mention of Dave on this podcast this week. He messaged me last night going, my roommate's a wrestling fan, he's wearing a Balor t-shirt. I could just imagine the excitement in his face, you know. It's like, oh yes, I could talk to him about wrestling. Sorry, Dave.
I bet that was the highlight of his trip.
He's got 3 weeks left, we'll see what happens. But no, the position was such a monster face. It led to a night in mid-1998 where they hoped, we're going to swing the ratings and we're going to give Goldberg the title. Now, Strack, you talked about green wrestlers when you talked about Ronda Rousey a few weeks ago. Was Goldberg in this category at this point in time?
Aye. The one thing I always say is they send big guys in who just squash people because they really can't be trusted to go out there and put something together. So they've done it with Ryback as well. It's just big guys going out, flatten somebody, obviously a lot smaller than them, can't really hurt them if they do botch it. And it's Goldberg was kind of the same. We'll build him up to be an absolute destroyer, but if you did watch Goldberg's actual matches, I mean, look at what happened to Bret Hart when he kicked him in the side of the head, and that was Bret Hart done. Mm-hmm. There's still there's a lot of guys there up there who are in the Hall of Fame and they're well recognised, and they're not really that great a wrestler, but there's guys that are not even in the mid card and they're superb wrestlers. Mm-hmm. It's just really, that's a look at the time. That's what they wanted. They wanted Goldberg to be a destroyer, they wanted to rip through people, be untouched. That's what they got.
But you could say he was very over at that point in time, which I think was why they helped. They helped get him that push to that point. I think the fans were really into watching these matches.
Aye, because guilty pleasure. Who doesn't like watching somebody get beat up? It's the UFC. When you watch Ronda Rousey when she was fighting and she was just flattening people, and that was people do enjoy. It's a guilty pleasure. People do enjoy watching other people get flattened.
Well, we kind of see that in the current day with Braun Strowman. I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. Braun is probably arguably the most over guy on the Raw roster because he goes out there and literally flattens everybody with a 10-year-old. Not using a 10-year-old. A 10-year-old as his partner. But yes, it's an appeal to people. I mean, Alan, are you going to chip in with something else?
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying about Lesnar, the fact that the fans are... It's not no Lesnar, sorry, Strowman. Just what you're talking about, the fans, he goes to walk away and the fans are like, one more, he just keeps doing it. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but the thing about it, Goldberg's wrestling wasn't the main point I was actually going to bring up about this, but this wasn't the main issue to me. No, the issue kind of revolves around when they went and pulled the trigger with Goldberg winning the World Heavyweight Championship. Now, it was July 6, 1998, and they obviously decided to cash in. So he would face Hogan for the title. Everybody was so up for seeing it. End of the night, Jack Hammer, Goldberg wins the title. My main issue is the fact that this match happened on an episode of WCW Monday Night Nitro. You've got the guy who you're going to position as the big star in the company you've given unbeaten for so long, and you give it away on free television for ratings. Was this a case of short-term gain over long-term strategy?
Definitely.
Scott, what's your thoughts?
Definitely, because like you said, this is purely a ratings thing and nothing else, because like, they were clearly going to give Goldberg the title at some point, but I think if WWF wasn't starting to climb back up in the ratings, they would have held out maybe to like a Starrcade or something like that. But I think it's because WWE was starting to get some momentum, they wanted to quickly find something to capitalise on. The one like thing that's still drawing people in, well, one of the things that's still drawing people in is Goldberg and his rise, so let's capitalise on it now. And a lot of people forget that when he won the world title, he also had the US title for some reason.
He'd won the US championship. I think he beat Raven for the US championship not long before that. It was just a case of just running, just kind of, they only had so many guys he could beat, especially with an unbeaten run. I mean, it doesn't have the same effect, I don't think, if you beat the same person multiple times. Mm-hmm. I mean, the one issue I kind of had with the way they all this Asuka streak is a lot of her matches were on house shows. Mm-hmm. And the NXT women's roster, there's only so many people you can beat, especially on house shows where they essentially face the same person like four times in a week on a house show. So that's kind of the thing, but that's the issue they kind of had with Goldberg. The list of people he could have beat was growing slower, so they kind of, it was in a way that they kind of had to pull that trigger soon, but big pay-per-views were coming up, you know. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of things, you know. Was it worth risking work for that one big win? Did you think they had some thoughts in their head that this was going to lead to a sustained ratings rise, or do you think they thought it was just going to be a one-time thing and they just went with it?
I think it was kind of, they thought it the way is, if we do this on a free show, it'll be kind of like a preview, not like the WWE to the pre-show. It'll be kind of, well, look what we've got. We've got this destroyer. He just beat Hulk Hogan. He's now got two titles. Come watch us, and it'll be... It's kind of an advertisement, try to give somebody a sample to show what they've got to then tune into the rest. I think that was their intention.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. And it is weird to me, though, because they could have made millions off this match.
Aye. Mm-hmm.
I mean, millions. I mean, could you, this was a point, obviously, nowadays it's a bit different because we've got the WWE Network. We could watch anything for that $9.99 payment a month, as we're constantly told. So it's maybe not got the same effect now, but you're talking about in that late 90s period, it could have made an absolute fortune. I mean, you look at kind of the money. A classic example, again, he's not here, but he would love me talking about this. Alan's here. Alan loves The Rock. WrestleMania 29 with Rock and Cena, the amount of money that made, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not in any way comparing Goldberg to The Rockers, John Cena, but he obviously he's a big guy, so kind of in that point in time it's kind of seen as a similar type of match. So you figure the money that made and kind of take it a wee bit down, but still would have made an absolute fortune, and it could have seen them help with those issues, you know, the production values type thing, things that kind of fell as the years went on, that could have been done, stopped with just this particular one smart decision. But I think it was just a case of, there's a lot of talk about Bischoff, how obviously kind of he got so involved with it, he kind of lost track of what was going on. Mm-hmm. Was this a case of that? Kind of, he was just thinking, I want to beat Vince.
Possibly. I mean, they were both at each other's neck throats, and WWE did it with Mick Foley and Max Mankind beating The Rock, which kind of ended the Monday Night Wars. That was the moment. So it's either sink or swim, and I think sadly it just didn't work for WCW. Bischoff, you're saying, pulled the trigger too early. Yeah, it was great, might have put in the lead for a couple of weeks, but then the mastermind McMahon waited and waited, and he knew when he pulled the trigger, and that was it. Game over.
He had his big match. He had the big match a couple of months earlier when Austin won the title with Mike Tyson. You know, that was a big moment.
Yeah,
he saved Austin for so long with the championship, and it paid off. And obviously, for the next 2 years, Austin would run essentially shop in WWE.
Yeah,
by himself. Scott, what have you said?
Sorry, just like we said, like trying to save it and instead of giving away on free TV. I think if they built it a bit more and actually did it on like that year Starrcade, like how big a star Goldberg was getting at the time, I think they could have even like topped, like you said, the year before, where that was the biggest buy rate. Like, see Goldberg finally, like, even though Hogan lost last year, he was still in like the main events, he was still dominating as world champion, but to finally have another rising babyface like take him down at the biggest show of the year for them could have probably topped their buy rate from the year before. But like you said, it's just a bit all about the ratings at the time.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about ratings. I mean, they did win the ratings war that night. However, they would only win the ratings one more time in their history. Can anybody off the top of their head tell me what that was?
I believe it was the night after Halloween Havoc 98, because the pay-per-view went off midway through DDP Gore, because Hogan and his classic five-star match with Ultimate Warrior went way too long.
I don't think that's actually the case.
Oh,
ooh, anybody else get any thoughts on this?
I watched it today and I can't remember now.
I was so confident about that as well.
I don't, honestly don't know. I'd be guessing.
It was the night of September 14th, 1998, where Ric Flair returned to reform the Four Horsemen. This came back
there. It just came back to me. He was in his heated promo with Eric Bischoff. Was, if you watch it, is hilarious, because you can just tell that wasn't really the planned promo. That was just two guys shouting each other.
Yeah, but I actually really liked that moment. Actually, I mean, again, why was Steve McMichael such a prominent part of the Horsemen? Can somebody please tell me why he gets so much in there?
Was his nickname though Mongo?
Yeah,
maybe he had photos on somebody.
He was married to Deborah at one point.
Deborah Austin's Deborah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was an NFL player, you know, you see how we use NFL players nowadays. I mean, some, they get blocked by security guards at WrestleMania, you know.
Or get allowed in a ring like Mojo Riley. Do you see his tweet? It says about Paige, I hope you recognise real talent. I mean, you better hope that's not true, mate, or you're gone.
Oh, I tweeted him back. When he said that, he said, I hope you recognise your talent. I said, you're going to be waiting a while. I don't care, I don't like him.
Yeah, I tweet him all the time as well.
Yeah, I saw some of the comments Scott was making about Mojo and the Superstar Shake-Up. And the moment when he got brought to Raw, I think, drew great pain in the McLeod household.
Oh, God. Please don't remind me, I was having a good time up till now.
It wasn't as much hate in the McLeod household as it was when Natalya came on screen, but we're not going to talk about that.
Not again, please no.
I sent Mojo Riley that.
Oh, harsh. That's harsh. But moving away from Mojo, we're not. We don't want to talk about Mojo. We then move on to another that year's Starcade in 1998. Now, you guys were kind of saying this, like, this could have been a great opportunity to do Hogan versus Goldberg. Goldberg wins the title, the streak goes on, everybody's happy. They went with the decision to go with Kevin Nash and Goldberg. Now, the thing about this, well, this is a lot of the time where the backstage politics really started to come to the fore, I think it's fair to say. I mean, Strat, you came about that earlier on. Kevin Nash was renowned for making decisions. I mean, he was a wrestler and a booker at this point in time. I mean, that's traditionally not a great combination in wrestling, I think it's fair to say.
No, because, I mean, do you know what the guys used to call Eric Bischoff? Eazy-E. Because it was so easy to manipulate to say, oh, I've got this great idea. And he'd go, yeah, that's a great idea. And it's like, no, it really isn't. But you really want to go with that, you can go with that. But I think what happened is, because Nash, Hogan, Hall all kind of got in quite parley with Bischoff, they had they had total creative control and a free ride. We're getting, it's basically a license to print money. So, but they've got creative control, as I said before, nobody really wants to look bad on TV.
I mean, even we're looking 1998 point, but is this a match that screams main event of your biggest show? Even at this point in time? I mean, Kevin Nash wasn't as obviously done in as he was when he came to WWE in 2002, but he was still kind of a draw, so you can understand maybe why they would have went with this one, even if he wasn't in charge.
I can understand it, because he was a big guy, you know, he's probably the second biggest guy in WCW physically, after Paul White, so I can understand he is a big draw, and to push him forward, because we've all seen Goldberg as a big guy, so let's put him head to head with a bigger guy and see what happens. So yeah, I can understand it being a big draw for it, because they kind of done the Hogan thing already, and I don't think two baby faces with Goldberg and Sting going would have had the same pull.
It was kind of like, I'm kind of looking at the card they had that night, and we didn't have the likes of Hogan wasn't there, obviously. Hogan was away running for president. Don't know where they came with that one, but the card wasn't exactly as solid. I mean, granted, it was still better than the year before, but there was some weird matches in there. I mean, we had Bischoff had a match again against Flair. I mean, that was kind of a payoff for that kind of one. Billy Kidman got two wins in the one night for the Cruiserweight Championship,
and he beat some quality wrestlers as well on that night.
Rey Mysterio, Juventud Guerrero, and Eddie Guerrero.
I heard
in the one night. I mean, screw Jericho beating Rock and Austin the one night. That is something. DDP beat the Giant. But they were kind of some of the big ones. But we had the likes of Finlay was in a tag match.
Wasn't
Jerry Flynn?
Scott Norton was on the show in a tag match. I can't remember who.
Yeah, he was in that match. I just mentioned it. Team with Brian Adams.
Yeah,
with Vincent involved. Why was he so involved?
I believe from what I've seen, Scott Norton was actually IWGP champion at this point. And he was actually, I can't remember who it was he was meant to face, but he was actually meant to scheduled to defend that title on this show, and he ends up in a tag match. I mean, I understand like plans falling through, but to go for a world title match essentially to a tag match is just on the biggest show of the year as well.
I mean, kind of like there's so many things about it. I mean, obviously, but you can understand why they went with Nash. And if memory serves me right, the match itself was actually quite well received for the kind of back and forth. I mean, Goldberg obviously is not renowned as a star technical wrestler. He's not your AJ Styles, John Cena, whatever the one they're called.
you just compared AJ Styles to John Cena.
It's an inside joke.
We'll fill you in on the break.
Not comparing them technically. No, it's just an inside joke. Don't worry about it. I hold my hands up to any of the AJ lovers out there. Everybody loves AJ. I don't know if they doesn't like AJ in the ring, but. Yeah, but the match was quite well received for what it was. The issue many people had was the finish. Now, we had a dodgy finish at the end of the year before show. Wasn't exactly the same, but oh god, was this quite a dreadful finish. I mean, what's your thoughts on how this match finished, guys? I mean, Scott, what's your thoughts?
Well, I was going to say, first off, for one standpoint, you can see what they were going for. From one standpoint, where like having some interference to hopefully keep Goldberg strong and defeat. Like we had to get involved in order to beat him, but a taser or whatever it was they used is maybe not the way to go about it.
What was a kettle prod or something?
A cattle prod.
Kettle prod, yeah.
A kettle prod.
Kettle prod. Cattle prod. potato, potato. I'm Dave's not here, so I'm doing some botches. Intentional botches. I need to stop talking to Dave. You're going to think he's really popular on the show.
He'll be boasting about it in New Orleans. You're talking about me.
every time you say his name, his ears perk up a little bit more.
He's been here for about half an hour. He already knows the way things go. But no, back on the subject. The issue people had, obviously, that kind of finish, it was not the feeling of a big match ending. I mean, nobody likes a kind of screwy finish at the end of your big show.
No.
I mean, you hear with WrestleMania, WrestleMania 2000, not many people like that the way that finished with the McMahons all getting involved screwing The Rock. Even in WrestleMania 17, the one people class as the greatest WrestleMania of all time, a lot of people don't like how that ended with Vince coming out and helping Austin, and Austin using the chair a million times on The Rock.
It was not a good night.
Austin winning the title was great, but I don't like. I'm not a fan of that finish, as great as the match was. So that was another one thing. The other things were, was this the right time for Goldberg's streak to end? As we said, it was 173 wins. He'd ran through most of the roster, so you could argue there was nobody else for it to beat, but. Should they have kept it going anymore? What's your thoughts? Should the streak have ended that night, Alan?
It's a tough one. I mean, all good things come to an end, but...
But this is what I said about Asuka, and I said this to you, Stephen, after the WrestleMania. Charlotte had to beat Asuka, because if Asuka beat Charlotte and took the title, she's pretty much beat everybody else. So it's just going to be boring. It's going to be Asuka's nobody beating him. And then who are you going to have to beat Asuka? Because she's already better with it. So it would have to be like they've done with this. They've kind of went, we've backed ourselves into a corner with Goldberg. We can't really do anything apart from screw him. That's the only way. That was, to be honest, I kind of seen why they done that, because it was the only way out. They couldn't have somebody beat him one-on-one and go, wait a minute, how could you not beat him one-on-one before, but now you can do it? That was the only way they had out of it, and as I say, that's the same reason why I didn't ask her. They had to pull the trigger and go, right, call the streak a finish, and we'll build a new chapter for there.
Yeah, I mean, call me traditional though. I don't really like the screwy finishes on your big pay-per-view, so I could understand if they did it in maybe like a smaller pay-per-view, but again, it's kind of swings in both ways. I mean, obviously, why would you end a streak on a small pay-per-view type thing, you know? So it's kind of, it swings that way as well, you know what I mean? As people say, what would the point if Asuka had lost the streak to, say, somebody like Alexa Charlotte or anybody like Alexa Bliss on like a Battleground show, you know? Would it have had the same impact? Absolutely not. So it's kind of the both ways on that one. I mean, talk about the other part of that match, was Kevin Nash the right man to do it?
I don't think there's going to be anybody else really to do it, because WCW, apart from a small group of guys like outside the NWO, they weren't really known at that point for building up new stars, so... I think they felt we don't have time to wait for a new guy to get built up. And from one standpoint, if you're going to beat somebody in like some street like Goldberg's, your biggest show of the year is the place to do it. Like Asuka, if you're going to end your streak, WrestleMania is obviously the place to do it.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense in that way, but again, you would have kind of maybe not seen it bad about it looking back if obviously Nash didn't have that position of the head booker.
Yeah.
Many people took that as a blatant abuse of power, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's what soured a lot of people on this fact. It's like, oh, I'm the main guy, I'm going to do what I want, you know what I mean? You've got, there's the thing that maybe people would say about WCW, and we'll talk about a bit later on, they're like great talented mid-cards, you know, but granted they couldn't beat Goldberg, but the fact that they get the head bookers winning the main title on the main show, you know, I mean, it comes in roundabouts. But another frustrating part as well for many people who were fans of Goldberg, I mean, they didn't know what to do with him after this either. He floundered for like the 2 years after this, which was quite an all that effort to build him up, and then boom, do absolutely nothing. I think he's one of the most memorable things that happened to him was when he tried to punch that when he punched the car window and broke his hand.
Did they not put him in a tag team with Bret Hart?
I can't remember.
I think they put him in a tag team with Bret Hart, and then Bret Hart joined the NWO, which
he's a former WWF guy, he has to join the NWO, that's the rules apparently.
Oh, but that was just, they tried to recreate it and just torpedoed it in the process.
Remember when they turned him heel, Goldberg? In 2000, they turned him heel when he sided with Russo, and nobody bought him as a heel.
That's how memorable that was. Maybe in this panel remembers.
Stunned silence when you mentioned that.
But we will talk about Vince Russo a lot more in the second half of the show, along with a lot of other things, so stay tuned to us. We'll be back with you in a short minute, where we're talking about things such as Vince Russo's involvement in the company, how they booked the likes of the undercard with the main guys, and a certain moment that put the butts on the seat. So we'll be back with yous in a short while.
Suplex retweet.
You're gonna get one.
I don't want any trouble with you. I don't want any trouble with you here, now. Where is it? What? I'm here.
This is where the big boys play, huh? Look at the adjective, play. We ain't here to play.
Live this Sunday in Baltimore, Great American Bash. You guys want to show up? You want to fight? You show up, I'll see if I can get you your fight.
Here I am on WCW television. How can that happen? Well, there's only one way. You see, it was just a matter of time before I, Vince McMahon, bought my competition. That's right. I own WCW.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're live from Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet on Strap Lee.
Fusion!
Welcome back to Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet. I'm Stephen Wilson and I'm joined by Strack, Scott and Alan. And we are talking about the demise of WCW. You were just listening to some of the most memorable moments in WCW history, including some of the ones we talked about in the first half of the show, and obviously one we might not, we probably won't talk to, because after the demise, Vince's announcement that he was buying WCW, and he appeared on the TV on the WCW show. I remember watching it that night, that was amazing. What a moment that was, actually. It was the Raw before Mania as well.
I remember seeing it, and I remember hearing the thing about Eric Bischoff was trying to put in his aim bid with people and like, investors and things like that, and then he was told that he could buy the company, he could buy the library, he could buy everything he wanted, but he wasn't getting a channel to put it on, so it kind of killed his
killed the vibe, yeah. Many people have spoken on Twitter say that's the main killing point, was the lack of the TV deal.
Right.
Obviously we're talking about a lot of the events that kind of led up to it, so anybody who is listening to the show and wants to join in the discussion of what led to the demise of WCW, maybe even debate some of the points we've talked about on the show, give us a message on Twitter. We are at Suplex Retweet. Anybody listening live and is enjoying the show, we are on iTunes and Anchor FM, depending on your device you're on, so give us a wee subscribe to that to get this show, any future shows and all our future content on the same day that we record it live. That's service for you. Something happened outside and everybody just kind of looked like, what's going on?
Should you look at a train?
I think it was a dead man coming in his motorcycle.
But a week too late.
Right guys, let's move on to our next point, and we're going to take the next step in our journey. We're going to go into the beginning of 1999, where not long after the fallout from Starrcade 98, and we were hoping to see it was a new year in wrestling, it was a new year, and we were hoping to get a great fallout. I mean, WCW had wanted to hit the nail on the head originally, and they'd advertised for the show, and the Georgia Dome in Atlanta sold out with a full 45 people watching it live to see Goldberg versus Kevin Nash. Anybody who remembers will be right in saying, we did not see Goldberg versus Kevin Nash. We're talking about, there's a lot of mistakes that happened in this night, and this is the first one we're going to talk about. Should a company advertise a match so heavily and then not give it to the fans, especially the first show of the year, guys? What's your thoughts?
It's just it's kind of like false advertising. People will buy. That's the thing that UFC was quite para about, with obviously the Conor McGregor bust thing. A lot of fighters pulled out. People had already bought the pay-per-view, people had already looked to get the pay-per-view, and they weren't going to get the card they were looking at. So it's kind of, it's like going out of shopping, you go to buy something and it's, you get it home and it's like, no, that's not exactly what's described to you. It's mis-selling.
Oh, it's got 100% mis-selling. I mean, the announcers didn't help it in that night. Oh boy, the announcers had a bad night, but we'll talk about that more in a wee bit. Throughout the night, they kept saying, this is the biggest match in the history of sport. Unlike the guys on the other channel, we deliver a real main event. Boy, you feel sorry for Tony Schiavone in a way, didn't you? Some of the things that was getting fed in that man's ear. It's like, you need to say this. It's like, but we talked about, we're not going to do Goldberg Kevin Nash. We did that before. Like, just say this. It's like, oh God, it's just terrible. But Alan, what was your thoughts, you think, on them not giving the advertised match that night?
Shocking. Mm-hmm. Absolutely shocking. It's like you're saying there, if I ordered that to find out that wasn't happening, I'd be demanding my money back. Mm-hmm. I'd be quoting every legal jargon the rest to get it back, so no, I would not be in a happy chappy.
Mm-hmm. Scott, do you agree?
Yeah, given that the fact that the ratings were again still going back and forth at this point, really to not deliver on an advertised match is really just a big risk of people turning over and tuning back over to their channel, which they end up doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you say, there's so much of the channel flicking going on at that point in time, it's a surprising move to kind of go down that line. But they say they were still delivering a show. I mean, they've got a show to put on as well, so they could potentially put on a good show, and then maybe something could happen at the end of it, and you're kind of like, oh, well, that's fine. And to their credit, they pulled Hulk Hogan out the bag. Now, obviously, at that point in time, Hogan was, I would say, as I said, he was on kind of a hiatus from wrestling. I think he was doing a lot of Hollywood at that point in time, and there was always the talk that he was going for president. Don't know why they went with that line, because obviously we would have found out if he was going for president or not. But yeah, they went with him going with Kevin Nash in the main event. It was kind of, in a way, it was kind of sold as, well, we're going to get two of the founding McFathers of the NWO facing each other for the world title. It might not be as bad as we think. Well, so looking at the show, I mean, the main event, it's probably down as one of the most disastrous main events on television, on wrestling. I think it's fair to say. Am I wrong in that? Does anybody think that this match was, this main event was good?
No, I mean, if anybody's seen the match, the whole finish, the crowd actually starts laughing, and then if you watch the front row people when he goes for the pin, everybody's looking going, no, and the ref counts to three and everybody's like, what just happened?
Yeah, I mean, to anybody not familiar with the match, Hogan and Nash go face to face, and Hogan does what's known as the finger poke of doom. Could you imagine that sounds like a finishing move for Dave.
It sounds like Dave's job, like.
Oh god, he's gonna hate us when he listens back to this. But no, ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Strachan. but no, he literally pokes Nash in the chest. You're right, Clacken. And brief.
Weirdly, I've not met Dave, but from what I've heard of him, that does not sound like it wouldn't be a possibility.
Let's not talk about Dave for the rest of the show in case he comes back and actually tries to hurt us. But no, the finger poke of doom. So it was essentially Hulk Hogan poked Kevin Nash in the chest. Nash went down 1-2-3, and you are literally thinking, what have they just done? They have. What is actually going on? Many people have described this as the most shocking moment in wrestling history. Is this a fair assessment?
Shocking in what part? What side? Shocking as in the result?
I think the word that somebody says is shocking does not adequately describe this moment. That is what has been referred to.
It's more like the most horrific ending to a wrestling match ever. I wouldn't say shocking. I'd say take a losing the streak is shocking. But that was horrific.
Oh, it was absolutely terrible. Kevin Nash has said back in interviews that he claimed to have had nothing to do with the booking of this, which is him, it's essentially him implying that it's all Hogan. You know, there's various other things, you know, but my god, I mean, you've advertised all night you're going to do the biggest match ever, and you've produced that. And worst of all, to some people, this was bringing back the NWO. Now, we were in 1999, the NWO had been about for 2.5 years. Was this... Should the NWO have never been seen again before this moment? Was the NWO run its course?
Yeah.
I think that's... See, with things like the NWO and even DX, see, once it's done once, leave it alone. Because when they brought back DX with Triple H and Shawn Michaels later on, it was the same result. It was good, it was funny, but it was just nothing like the original.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the original incarnation, obviously this wasn't the original incarnation, but the names that were starting to come about in the original... NWO was clear, you know, why it was becoming saturated. We were getting the likes, we talked about him as well. Vincent was in the NWO, so that was obviously, I can't remember his name, Virgil. So Virgil and Michael Wall Street, better known to people as IRS. We had Big Bubba Rogers, who was the boss man. You know, there was so many people. I mean, there was Dennis Rodman was in the NWO. I mean, come on, why would Dennis Rodman be in the NWO?
Did you know the thing with him and Karl Malone?
Yeah.
DDP and Karl Malone against Dennis Rodman and...
Hulk Hogan. Yeah. I mean, there was so many people in it at one point. I mean, it started off with three. We got four when we got DiBiase and then the Giant showed up. It kind of made sense. And it's when you start getting these names about, and then I think that it was too much. I think bringing it back was even more... I mean,
Buff Bagwell was in it, wasn't he?
I think, yeah, he was.
Yeah, I think that was the moment... finished. I think when Bagwell came in, you're like, too far.
Even Hulk Hogan said that. He said there was a point where it was like a football team full of people. There was, did we say Conan?
I didn't say Conan.
Conan was in it. There's just so many guys joined it. It's like half your roster's NWO, so who are they going to fight?
Sorry, it kind of really been stretched thin enough when they started doing the whole Hollywood Bay Wolfpack, and then they had something called the NWO B team, which once you have the word B team in your name, you're never getting taken seriously again. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of the Mexican wrestlers started the LWO.
I love the BWO, BCW though.
Yeah, but at least that was meant to be a parody.
Oh, it was funny.
NWO became a parody itself by the end.
Yeah, I mean, talking about Buff Bagwell, that man had the worst week in his career in WWE. He was employed for like a week, it felt like, and he had that match with Booker T on Raw, ruined their chance of getting a show on their own, and then his mum called him in sick.
Yep.
He still denies that to this day. I've seen the interviews, he still denies that that's what happened.
Oh, come on. His mum is more famous than he is.
He said he lasted a week. It was a week more than he should have.
Oh, yeah. Mixed reactions on Bagwell. But that moment itself, it would have been bad just on its own. We then need to factor what happened on the other channel and partly on WCW with what happened in WWE or WWF obviously at the time. Now, Alan, you alluded to this a wee bit earlier on when Mankind beat The Rock for the WWF title.
Yep.
Big moment for Mankind. Might not have been as big as it would have, probably bigger than it should have been. It was big, but it was the fact that we got the famous butts on seat announcement by Tony Schiavone. As I said a few minutes ago, Schiavone had a horror show that night, and it's very when he had continuously told the fans that night that Mankind was winning the championship, and it was the line of, oh, that will put butts on the seat. I think he regrets that to this day.
He does. I've seen the interview. He said he was told him to say that, and he said that actually he was quite actually interested. It was if your boss, you're told to do it, you do it. You need to do it.
Yeah, but it's crazy. I mean, it's kind of like WCW did that quite a lot in the year when they were winning the ratings war. They were giving away what WWF had done because WWF was pre-taped most of the time at that point in time. Mm. It's hard to think that you'd have a pre-taped Raw in the current day, considering we're in the days of the internet, spoilers are ripe, you know. I mean, you look at NXT, I mean, you know what happens in NXT about 6 weeks in advance if you stay away from it. Same with TNA, you know. But, yeah, giving away that one was risky, but it was working for a lot of the time, until this point in time, because they forgot about the fact that, obviously, Mankind didn't do very much in a WCW. He was obviously Cactus Jack, Mick Foley, but didn't quite have the same appeal. They obviously forgot that 6 months earlier, this man was launched off of a cell for the good of wrestling and the good of WWF. Horrible move. 300,000 people changed the channel. It's amazing. I mean, I look back at it. That's one of my favourite moments of Raw history.
Uh-huh.
I absolutely love it. What's your memories of that actual moment while we talk about it, guys? Scott, what's your thoughts?
Like I said, It had been something they'd done before, like giving away the results, but what they hadn't taken into account is back when they did it originally, the WWF product wasn't good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think because Mick Foley hadn't done a lot in WCW, I think they didn't really account for how over he'd become in WWF.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they even say in one of the war documentaries, I think it was Jericho, it said, when you look back at the biggest war blunders, this will be right up there.
Yeah, I mean, Mankind was a bit annoyed. Mick Foley was a bit annoyed himself because he heard about it and he's like, oh, he's ruined my big night.
Yeah.
You know, but he obviously got the last laugh. I mean, I think you could try and quantify the pop that Austin got when he came out and helped him. It was absolutely amazing. You know?
But I think WCW kind of shot themselves in the foot. If you're going to release the results, release it as something that people meh about. Yeah. But Mick Foley was really over. Everybody liked him. You see the King of the Ring thing, and he's building his way up, and it went from the Mankind with the brown suit to the shirt and tie and visiting Vincent Hospital, the lovable character,
right,
that everybody started to like him. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you've just said, oh, by the way, this person you saw really like is going to win the world title tonight, everybody's went, oh, really? Oh, forget this, and they've just bailed.
Yeah.
So, which I think was the really dumb thing to do.
Oh, it was so stupid. I think as well, I'm right in thinking that WCW ended a wee bit later than Raw that night, so what I think, I might be completely wrong, but I think on that theory, they've obviously seen about that, thought, oh, flip the channel, see him win the title, great, let's see how Nitro ended.
Mm-hmm.
And then they see finger poker doom.
Nobody come back.
It's like, oh my god.
Well, that was nice.
You know, we talked about earlier about the Goldberg state one being on free TV,
mm-hmm.
and, well, the difference between that and the Mankind one is, this was part of a story that I think started at Survivor Series, where Mankind getting screwed and The Rock becoming the corporate champion, and this would be a story that would continue the next months with that, like, at the I Quit match a few months later. See, that they were doing this as part of just a next chapter of a story. WCW did the thing with Goldberg, it's like a cheap ratings boost.
Yeah, it was definitely, but it was an absolute disaster for WCW, and it was one that they evidently wouldn't recover. But there was signs, obviously, we talked about some of the main signs, but there was wee signs that were evident beforehand, and they were creeping in so much more as we got into 1999. Now, we talked about kind of Dennis Rodman was something that obviously they were employing all these celebrities in there, but some of them, you couldn't really understand why they were using them. You've got Dennis Rodman, Jay Leno, the Chucky character was in there. I mean, there
RoboCop.
Was so
RoboCop
was years before that. That was the same.
The guy couldn't move. Let's put him in a wrestling ring.
Yeah, they had the, was it the Kiss Monster as well?
Kiss Demon,
oh my god.
They'd done that whole triple threat thing with Vampiro Sting and Kiss. Hey. The Kiss Demon, it was just, ugh.
Like Glacier as well.
Sub-Zero.
Oh my god, it was so much bad. But I think around the best time, the thing that was frustrating a lot of people was the fact that they were getting sick of these high level talents. We've talked about Nash, Hogan, Hall, these type of people using creative control power, and it was going too much. But what many people were noticing was there was such a talented roster underneath them. Now, we talked about, like I said, the best example I think to many people was Chris Jericho.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I think Chris Jericho had a very good feud with Goldberg, I can remember, in 1988. I think I also had this feud with Malenko as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When he first brought out the list. Was it the submission list or something?
Yeah,
it was
Man with 1,004 Holds.
Man's 1,004 Holds, brilliant. But obviously he felt he deserved better. And he was the first to jump ship. First main one really to jump ship back to the WWE. And look at what has happened to his career. Skyrocketed. There was so many guys in that type of bracket. I mean, we talk about, there was guys like the Radicals, and there was the Cruiserweight division. There was so much. I mean, WWE, they chose to go with some of their young guys, and I think that helped. Did WCW miss a trick in purely targeting their main guys, Alan?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, you get Eddie Guerrero, it's all mid-carder who went on to become world champion, Chris Benoit, Malenko was a solid mid-carder in WWE, so was Perry Saturn. But as you were just saying, Chris Jericho, he's a future Hall of Famer, you know, first ever undisputed champion, 9-time Intercontinental Champion. I mean, the list goes on. They made a huge mistake by not giving these guys the push, and thankfully McMahon seen the talent in them, but especially Jericho earlier on, when he thought, right, I'm bringing this guy over to split The Rock and Austin up, and it was genius.
Yeah, I mean, Strack, on previous shows you've mentioned being a great fan of the light heavyweight division. Obviously you mentioned that WrestleMania 98, was it 98 WrestleMania?
The Ugula against Taka Michinoku.
Yeah.
It became SRAOS. I mean, WCW had an amazing like cruiserweight division, and then it kind of, the good thing is it kind of just jumped ship at TNA and it created the X division. But because I mean, you'd get like teams like Young Dragons, you had Three Count, you had Juventud Guerrera, you had all the brilliant, really good high flyers, and that was more my style of wrestling. So when I watched that's what made me interested, because I'll be honest, Hogan Nash matches and things like that were boring to me, because it was just really clothesline, bump, bump, finish.
I mean, WCW, did they not have the Cruiserweight Tag Team Championships as well towards
they
the end?
They had towards the end, they had that, and it was kind of the Freebirds rule, because they had the Three Count against the Young Dragons. It was Shannon Moore.
I'm really
Shane
glad
Helms,
somebody else remembers Three Count.
Aye. And Evan Courageous.
Yeah.
And they had the thing against Young Dragons. Jimmy Wang Yang was one of them.
Sure he was, yeah.
Kaz Hayashi and somebody else. I apologise to the guy's name. But they had a really good feud with the six man tags that they had, because they were just total non-stop action. That's the thing, they were just so out there. And same way, give props to Vince to bring over the Radicals, because these guys are no 6-foot muscle monsters, they're just really sound technical wrestlers. Same with Jericho, you bring your guys who are solid workers, the result paid off.
I mean, I remember some of the guys that were in that Cruiserweight division that you talk about. There was some fantastic guys at one point. I mean, we had the Psychosis and Juventud Guerrera when they had the masks on. They would put on great shows all the time.
Yeah, that's the first time I've ever seen Jushin Thunder Liger was on WCW.
Oh, I remember.
And he all the Ultimo Dragon. He had Rey Mysterio before he got big, which was confusing why he done that. But I mean, his match with Eddie, with the purple suit.
Yeah, I remember.
That is how you do a high flying match, and the psychology of that match was brilliant as well.
I mean, you talked about Ultimo Dragon, you kind of feel sorry for him a wee bit, because he had such a solid run in the likes of WCW and New Japan, and then he went to WWE and he's forever remembered just for that one moment at WrestleMania 20, where he nearly decked on the stage.
Well, that was the thing, Ultimo Dragon, Austin Aries is trying to beat his record, because Ultimo Dragon had 13 titles.
Does the picture of him holding all those belts?
He just puts his hands out and he's got a title doing every single arm and run his neck, run his waist. And you let Ultimo Dragon was an amazing competitor and kind of went to WWE and got ruined.
Yeah, there was some other names as well that kind of were developing there. We talked about Shane Helms, Gregory Helms. He was the last Cruiserweight champion. Elite Skipper as well. He's always remembered for that moment in TNA when he balanced on the triple on the cage, on the six-sided cage.
Yeah.
That was just please don't die moment. You had Lance Storm as well.
Oh yeah.
Lance Storm was for one time in Cruiserweight and Hardcore champion at one time.
And US champion, and he renamed all three belts.
And the Canadian title, the Canadian Cruiserweight title, I thought it was hilarious.
Aye. Recruited Hacksaw Jim Duggan at the Team Canada. I remember that one very well.
I thought see if Bobby Roode done that, Bobby Roode won the US title and then it made it the Canadian title. I thought that was hilarious. But I never pulled the trigger on that.
But it was such a talented Lord Division. I mean, Scott, obviously I know that you were very young at this point in time. You probably don't remember it as well, but talking about some of the names we just mentioned there, are you surprised it didn't utilise them better?
Yeah, I mean, like Jericho, like it's hard to know if he really would have been like a main eventer in WCW, but at least giving him more of a chance than they did. Like, and we can see throughout his career, whatever chance he gets, whatever TV time he gets, especially in WCW, he utilises it to the best of his ability, especially after he turned heel. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the funniest moments in WCW, I think, is when he went to Washington after he got screwed out of the TV title, and he went around with a big sign outside the pub, and he said a conspiracy victim with a big arrow pointing down at him. He's protesting outside the White House and he's trying to get in, but the guards won't let him in.
Oh, Gulak needs to do that. Oh, Gulak needs to go to the White House going, maybe no fly zone.
Maybe that's why he's over there now.
Bravo. Bravo.
But, another thing about, we talked about the Cruiserweights, I've watched some of the matches, but basically, like say, Ultimo Dragon v Rey Mysterio or Dragon v Dean Malenko, they're good matches, but what's off-putting about them is the commentary don't really care. Like, they're focusing on what's coming up, like who's Hogan fighting in the main event, and even if they do know them, like all these guys are known for like Mexico or Japan, and also the commentators don't do their research or they're not giving any much facts about them. Like, oh, that was a cool looking move, wasn't it? And then when they do try to make them seem serious, look like serious competitors, the audience are conditioned to make them look conditioned to seeing them as opening card acts. Like, when they try to make Billy Kidman a credible threat to Hulk Hogan, it just didn't work.
I remember that. That was when it was starting to become an issue. I mean, I think Hogan ended up battering him, I think it was at Spring Stampede, I'm trying to remember.
Aye, Nash hit him with a bat in the ankle.
Didn't Hogan throw him in a trash can at one point?
I think so.
Just goes to show what they thought of guys like him.
In the trash can, Nirvana boy.
Yeah, but Billy talked about that. I mean, Billy Kidman was really good, but they tried to kind of elevate him, but didn't kind of work. But there was a lot of guys, there was so much talent there, and it was just the main ones kind of that come to mind, the likes of the Guerreros and the Jerichos and that type of thing. So there were, but a great example, I think, of how this was working. We talk about in 1998, you mentioned, Scott, about Halloween Havoc 98, where we had Warrior versus Hogan. Uh-huh. Two guys who'd fought in the 80s, 10 years later, wasn't the same. Round about that time, we were getting on WWE, we were getting that kind of triple feud between Kane, Undertaker and Austin, which was a lot more fresh. I mean, Kane had come in for a year and he was hot as anything.
Yep.
And no pun intended. obviously Austin was the biggest star in the world, Undertaker was obviously big as he was, eventually The Rock was starting to come through. I mean, you look at that compared to that, I mean, Halloween Havoc 1988 was a terrible pay-per-view. I mean, absolutely horrible show.
That show you're talking about is Breakdown. Cause I've got that in VHS, that's how old am I.
That's a brilliant pay-per-view.
But you had two main events, you had the triple threat, well, technically a handicap with Austin and against Kane and Undertaker, then you had The Rock, Shamrock and Mankind in a cage match.
First of all, triple threat cage
before
match.
Before that as well, and that was a brilliant, you had so many good matches before that, and you're like, this is why they're beating you, because they're putting new combinations together. WCW was just all, somebody said this, they're using the same guys, the same matches. Yeah. Over and over and over again, to a point where you're like, oh, I'm bored of this.
Yeah. I mean, on the note of that one, actually, that reminds me of one of the old WCW games. Yeah, I would use the same move all the time, and Tony Schiavone would actually say on commentary, he's using the same move over and over again.
You've discovered a glitch.
Oh, bro, that was a really good show. I looked at the Breakdown show that year. Obviously, we had that triple threat match as well, but what a great show. I mean, DX versus Southern Justice and Jeff Jarrett.
Oh, that was good.
The best part about that triple threat main event is Undertaker gets tossed into the steps and you can hear a very high-pitched man in the crowd ask Undertaker if he's okay.
in a Falls Count Anywhere match between Bradshaw and Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's
as well. The Brood was introduced.
I was going to
that's
say
when Christian made his debut.
Edge against Owen Hart, and that was a brilliant match, and that was solid.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's so something that we've now moved on to talking about a WWF pay per view. Well, what was happening? That's what happened with WCW. that just shows how badly they were utilising their undercard at this point in time.
Yeah,
but I think we then go forward to a bit later that year into 2000, and that's where we got the man we know as Vince Russo coming into WCW. Now, I don't know if people might be too harsh on Vince Russo, but Vince Russo, I think it is fair to say, he played a big part in the Attitude Era. Mm. I think it's hard to kind of argue with that fact. He had that big history with WWE. You understand why they hired him. I mean, this guy's came in, he did all of that. What can he do with us? But I think the issue they had with Vince Russo is there was a clear lack of structure. And the main kind of structure was a man named Vince McMahon. There was nobody like that, and what we led to was some stuff we'll talk about later, but was that, on hindsight, bad move to bring him in and not give him so much control?
Yep.
I'll be honest, I think, this is my opinion, I think Vince Russo and Hogan kind of went to WCW to bring it down for the inside.
See, I've heard that, people have that type of theory.
I think that for day one, because Hogan having creative control, but then be able to jump back to WWE whenever he felt like, and Vince Russo going for the hottest product in WWE to then go to WCW. Nah, this doesn't add up. This doesn't add up.
Yeah, it was a bit weird, you know. But they did offer him such a big, apparently he was offered a massive contract. Him and Ed Ferreira were both to that to lead the WCW revival, it was apparently the. Obviously, we are all familiar with the Attitude Era. It was controversial, things would change quickly, but it was at a pace. One of the things people would say about his booking in WCW was he tried to do the same, but quicker. No. And that never works.
There was a desperation to it, you had to turn it around faster.
Yeah.
But you felt it when you watched the matches and you look back at it, you could see it.
Plus, I was going to say, here's a stat for you. How many times did the WCW world title change hands in 6 months?
Oh, it changed so much. Oh, it changed. Was this the point where Arquette won it? We'll talk about him in a bit.
How many times?
13.
No,
I would say 16. 28.
15 times in 6 months. It
so
changed
close.
Hands.
So close.
That's how Booker sees as a 5-time champion, because that was a great week.
might as well have won the hardcore title.
he did win it a lot in his last year. I mean, fair play to him, he'd worked his way up and he probably deserved to be champion.
Yeah.
But they gave him it so many times, it was unreal. But
they gave him it after Arquette had already won it, though.
We'll talk about Arquette in a bit, don't worry about it, we'll go about on that one. But yeah, he was doing that. Things were... The one thing you could say about him, though, he did try to push these younger talents, but because he was doing all this so quickly, it was hard to kind of buy into him as a proper star, because they were winning the title, losing the title, winning the title, losing the title, you know, it was so much hot potato going on. But one of the things I think many people remember Russo's spell in WCW for was some of the matches we got. Oh my god, some of the matches. How many times things can we see on a pole?
Also the question that Vince Russo asked himself.
I mean, that's why I was talking earlier on how Judy Bagwell's more famous than Buff.
Well, that was a new creative strategy. It's like, we have things on a pole, but can we get on a forklift? It's still a pole, Vince.
Yeah, it was the Judy Bagwell on a pole match. We had Viagra on a pole match. We had Piñata on a pole match with the Mexican wrestlers. I mean, come on.
We had that San Francisco 49ers match with four boxes, one of them has the title in it, and then Booker T opens one, and it's a framed picture of Scott Hall, and he just looks in the camera as if to say, like, he realises, what the hell has this become?
Was that the same match that the title fell at the back of the box and fell on the ground?
Fell at the box as he went and gets it.
He's the champion, oh wait, he's not picked it up.
I generally could not remember that bit with Scott Hall, that's brilliant. Could you imagine opening something that's just Scott Hall? Like, it could have been worse, it could have been Norman Smiley or something like that.
Guess what you get, Stevie, guess what you're getting for Christmas? A framed photo of Scott Hall.
Yes!
And Gilbert.
I'll get Virgil to sign it.
If you feel sorry for how I waited away, but oh my god. But there was just the clear lack of filter, it was so obvious. I don't think it was more obvious than the fact that when we got the Oklahoma character, do you remember that one?
Oh.
vaguely.
Yeah. Vaguely. Scott, do you want to describe it briefly, quickly?
I've only heard of it because of how Jim Cornette's rants about it. Essentially, he was a character who was meant to be a parody of JR, and he would speak with like one side of his mouth. It was meant to parody a real illness that JR had, his Bell's palsy.
His Bell's palsy, yeah. The character took the mick out of JR's Bell's palsy. Jim Cornette has been well vocal in saying that he was going to absolutely annihilate Ed Ferreira, who played Oklahoma, for doing that. And he still says about it, he was so annoyed with it. I mean, granted, it doesn't take much to annoy Jim Cornette, but...
Well, yeah, but JR, well, history is showing, is one of his closest friends as well. He's had this serious illness, which he struggled with for a lot of his life. And then to have somebody go on national TV and take the mick out of him, it's really hard to watch. I mean, you would get annoyed as well.
If you really want to have fun, just tweet a photo of Vince Russo to Jim Cornette. That is the bit. That's the most fun you'll have all night.
Have you done that as well?
Aye.
That's what you did.
Reply.
I send gifts. I block me for 24 hours and unblock me.
Really?
Aye.
I tweeted Vince Russo once and I'm really sad I didn't get a reply back.
You might get some type of reaction.
He was offering to pay him money to cut promos on people they knew, and I asked him, you cut a promo on yourself for being your own biggest mark. I'm sad I didn't get a response. I mean,
would be quite good if you did get one. But Russo's spell temporarily as the main booker of the company ended when he tried to make Tank Abbott the world champion. Anybody who's not familiar with Tank Abbott, he's a UFC fighter.
Meh.
Now,
that reference just went right over my head.
Yeah, he had no, wasn't really trained. The crowd didn't want him as the champ, and they tried to make him champ, but that's the point where we're like, yeah, we'll probably take you away, and we'll try and rebuild. But he did eventually return as an on-screen figure right in 2000, where the ratings were down, him and Bischoff were both reinstated, and we got that type of brat, a complete split with the Millionaires Club and the New Blood. I mean, does people remember this this type of thing? I quite liked it to start with.
I liked the New Blood, that was quite interesting, especially the feud they had with Vampiro and Sting. That was quite interesting.
They went too far with that. It got ridiculous.
Aye. When Vampiro covered Sting in blood, and it was one of the matches where Vampiro was trying to beat Sting up, but he couldn't get the chain off the back of him because he couldn't do it for the rafters. He couldn't undo the harness and just beat him up for 10 minutes while he was still hanging for the rafter. And it's like, you got to pin him, he just needs to go back up.
Yeah, it's the Human Torch match.
That's
what he said. Where he sets Sting on fire, and it's obviously a stunt double. But then once he's set on fire, there's a flip off the Titantron and onto like a panorama of the ramp. It's like, what are you doing? They kind of took that one too far. It started off really good. It was good because it was like Sting was his protege. No, it was his mentor. And then he obviously turned on his mentor, and it was kind of good that way, but then it just got...
The graveyard match, it was kind of a rip-off. I noticed the thing with Russo is quite rip-off a lot of WWE stuff at the time, because he made Juventud start to speak like The Rock, and I thought that would just sound...
The juice!
They're really weird. And then you had Booker T copying The Rock's... Well, obviously, he calls it a bookend, but it was The Rock Bottom. It's basically what it was. Mm-hmm. And then they started having the graveyard match with Vampiro and Sting. Obviously buried alive. There's just so many things that were just ripping off, and it's like, I thought Vince Russo was meant to be this creative guy and so original, and he was just ripping things off.
It was the fact as well that you had the young guys, which were the new bloods, were all heels. Millionaires Club were all faces. So it was just a way of saying, well, let's support the young guys, but we'll make them all heels. I mean, some of the guys in that stable that were heels that don't really suit heels well. At the time, we had Billy Kidman. Rey Mysterio was a heel at that point as well.
I think he had Sean O'Hare and Mark Jindrak as a tag team, and they were, I don't know why they didn't go further than they did. They two were immense.
Yeah, there was the tag division got quite good towards the end, but they didn't quite get the same.
What, a Chronic?
Oh, Chronic, terrible. Don't start with Chronic. Remember the WWF debut?
I think it.
Against Kane and Undertaker. Oh, that's one of the worst matches ever. If you never watched that match, watch it and think, why did they do this? This is why the invasion was not great. But can we talk about Bash of the Beach 2000? Does that ring a bit? Do we remember what happened at Bash of the Beach 2000? Mm-hmm. With the infamous shoot promo from Hulk Hogan?
Oh, the Jeff Jarrett just laying down.
Yeah,
that was funny.
That was an interesting pay-per-view, that one. For anybody not familiar with that one, it was Hulk Hogan versus Jeff Jarrett for the WCW World title. Jeff Jarrett lay down, Hogan won it, and then Hogan did a promo on Russo, which was it's been debated. Some people say it's a shoot, some people say it was an angle, you know. But then Vince Russo essentially came out and slaughtered Hogan.
Aye.
I mean, anybody with memories of that, does it sound like something that's a shoot, or does it sound like it was real life that Vince Russo maybe took too far?
I don't trust anything Hogan says. But it was so funny to hear in an interview that Hogan and Jarrett planned this big elaborate match, and then he just laid down. It was great.
I think it was Bischoff said that the plan was Hogan would take the title, go away, and Jarrett would win it later on, and Hogan would come back claiming to be like the whole real world champion, and then they would have a match with you, the real world champion, was that kind of storyline they'd done before. But then after that, when Hogan left, that was all supposedly a part of the plan. But then Russo's thing, according to Bischoff, wasn't planned, because I think Russo wanted Jeff Jarrett to win because they were friends. And if that's true, then you see, look back at his promo, he just looks like a spoiled kid coming out and shouting at Hogan just because he didn't get the result he wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Alan, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know much about it, but pretty much what I've read about it is pretty much what the guys are saying, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. If you get a chance, watch it, because Hogan looks so disappointed. It's great.
No, it wasn't the best time in WCW history. And I think we've mentioned it briefly. We're going to talk about it. David Arquette, World Heavyweight Champion. And I mean, I know his wife was in Friends at that point, but come on,
she went mental when he went into that. Apparently, went absolutely mental.
Oh, I've heard that. There was promos about it, and I don't 100% know. There was her telling them off, and I don't 100% know how much storyline that was.
I know the thing as well, the writers for Friends wrote in, remember she was going by a guy, it's known Iron Man, and he wanted to be an Ultimate Fighter. Apparently that was a parody of David Arquette, mm-hmm. saying that he wanted to go into wrestling and that he was going to end up in a body cast.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's rather harsh to do.
John Favreau.
John Favreau.
And then as well, everyone in that season of Friends was called Arquette at the end of their name. David Schwimmer, Arquette.
Was that not the first episode of that one season? Because I think it happened just after they were married.
I'll be there for you. No, you really won't.
But yeah, what's your thoughts on this as a booking decision, guys? I mean, were they desperate to put the belt on an actor?
Absolutely. It's for shock value. That's what they went for. They thought, right, what can we think? Let's just get the most untalented man we can find and put him in a ring, make him world champion for the shock factor. People will tune in for this, and they didn't. They just laughed at him.
I think the reason that they done it was he brought out that movie Ready to Rumble.
Yeah,
and I think they thought, if we make the guy that's in this wrestling movie, put him over, it'll kind of get us linked to the movie and the movie linked to us, and that'll make us relevant again. But it's like, no, that's really not going to work.
No, definitely not. I mean, remember the Triple Cage match that came off of that? They used it quite regularly. That was that's a bad match. Poor Chris Canyon gets thrown off the top of it by Mike Awesome. Quite a bad, but it's something to watch. You should watch it.
Alan said about being like shock factor. I think that just really sums up Vince Russo's booking in a nutshell, just all shock factor, especially in 2000, because they were willing to do anything to get a bit of publicity, because especially at that time in 2000, I mean, WWF could do no wrong that mm-hmm. entire year, and that wasn't bad enough, and WCW had matches like this and decisions like this, and like,
Well, he ended up with a belt as well.
Yeah,
Russo. Back in September 2000, but a lot of people think that wasn't meant to happen because he got speared through the triple cage.
It was meant to look like it wasn't meant to happen, so that he could have the title, but not make whoever he was fighting look weak. But
I think though it was, I think it was an accident, because you see kind of Booker T at the end of that kind of looked confused, as if, wait a minute, that wasn't meant to happen,
mm-hmm.
and he kind of just went with it. I think Goldberg was meant to hit him, but no, hit him that hard.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely, but there was a catalogue of things going on. It was hard to take it seriously. It was getting ridiculous. I mean, Estrak said the multiple title changes as well. I mean, granted, WWE did it quite a lot in the Attitude Era, but it kind of felt a bit different.
But then with WWE in the Attitude Era, it built up so many good rivalries, mm-hmm. because, I mean, I've always said this for ages, people disagree with me. See, the Unforgiven pay-per-view, it was a six-pack challenge.
Yeah.
You had the Bulldog, Kane, Big Show, Rock, Triple H and Mankind, mm-hmm. and Austin as the Enforcer. That built up so well because you had each guy attacking each other on Raw or SmackDown, and it just, I thought that really that should have been a Rumble or a SummerSlam match, no Unforgiven, but still great to see it.
Sorry, as well as a lot of title changes in WCW at that time, titles got vacated a lot. Like, I mean, one night when Vince was on Eric Bischoff came back in 2000, they vacated every championship.
Took it off them all.
I was going to say, that was a banner year for Vacant. Like, and that night, Vacant looked like Ultimo Dragon.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that one. That was the point. Sid Vicious was the world champion at that point in time. He got the belt stripped from him, and then
Jeff Jarrett got the US title, took off him.
He was feuding with the Wall. I remember that one. And then we got to Spring Stampede. There was a tournament in that night, actually. It was not bad to watch, but you kind of look back and it was a bit disarray. I mean, Diamond Dallas Page's wife turned on him for Jeff Jarrett, you know?
I think, wasn't there a pay-per-view in late 2000, early 2001? They had apparently two tournaments in one night, one for the tag titles, one for like the US title, or was a number one contender tournament?
I think you may be talking about that night, you're talking about, because there was a tournament for every championship that night, like a six-pack, a six-man match for the Cruiserweight Championship. But it was so disarray, it was no surprise that he eventually left again. We got to the start of 2001, then it was a combination, the Turner, there was a Turner,
Time Warner,
AOL merger. They didn't want to do wrestling anymore. And essentially, Bischoff tried to fuel a purchase for them, but the main issue was they never got the TV deal. So that's pretty much been nailed in the coffin, I think. But I think half the stuff that maybe happened before it probably led to the fact they never got a TV deal.
Well, there was another stat for you. In 2000, how much money did WCW lose in 2000?
Oh, about $60
million. $65 million they lost in 1 year.
You can understand why people wouldn't want to take the risk with them for a TV deal. Mm-hmm. If they had a better year, 2000-1999, they would have been a lot more attractive for a TV deal. But that's probably the thing that kind of nailed them, you know?
Aye, if you've lost that much money in 1 year, that's...
Nobody's going to take the risk. No. So, we're towards now the end of our... talking about the demise of WCW. I'll go around just quickly, the guys, and I'll ask if he's got any more final points of how you thought the demise of WCW went. Strack, what's your thoughts?
Just going back to the point where a lot of guys who jump ship back to WWE, I mean, because you had guys like Chris Benoit. I watched this one live. He had a match with Sid Vicious and he won the match, and then they done the whole reverse of decision. And I remember watching an interview with Benoit, people text him saying, oh, congratulations buddy, well done and everything, and then text them 2 minutes later after Sid Vicious re-won the title and went, oh, sorry man. But that's got to be disheartening to guys who, like Jericho, who is a great performer, future Hall of Famer, couldn't get by the glass ceiling. Rey Mysterio, who is an amazing performer. Eddie Guerrero, who was an amazing performer, they never seem to will move them up. Mm-hmm. But that was the politics for Hogan, Nash, Hall. Didn't they want to let anybody else, basically didn't want anybody else in their spot.
Didn't Eddie Guerrero say in his autobiography he believed Kevin Nash was literally the devil? He actually said that, I think. He's actually the devil.
Oh, probably.
You can see that. I mean, Alan, what's your thoughts?
Yes. I think the biggest problem is, we were talking about it during the break there. At one point, WCW had probably a better array of talent in name only when you think about Hogan and you're talking about Hogan, the NWO, Goldberg and all that, but they had guys there that just weren't at the same level. We were talking about it, like Bret Hart was kind of his peak, Hogan was past it, Ultimate Warrior was past it, Roddy Piper was past it, and that's kind of how it fell, because these guys were coming in and they weren't prepared to go let the other guys go over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a key issue. It was one of the points I was quite happy to raise up, because it was so many people would say that if they'd developed them a bit more, there would be a lot more there. I mean, Scott, what's your final point?
Well, that's clearly a lot of my knowledge is from like after the fact, but looking at it, it is a real shame that WCW went the way it did, because like going into 97, they had a real chance of being like one of the biggest companies, maybe even surpassed WWF, but I think it was just their own, like, they just made too many mistakes that eventually by the time Vince bought it, it was essentially a case of putting it out of its misery.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, Quacko, you've observed this show from a distance all in. From what you've heard, what do you think was the main reasons that WCW went down?
Yes. I think it was, from what I was hearing, I think it's just, like see when it comes to, like, I work in marketing. Mm-hmm. To me, negative marketing never works. You should only focus on what you're doing and not focus on what other people are doing. The minute you start trying to put down other people, that it comes across as quite desperate, and people kind of switch off to you automatically. Mm-hmm. It has to be something stupendously good that you're doing to replace it. But from what I'm hearing, I don't think they were really doing it, because me personally, I never really watched WCW. My only exposure to WCW was the Alliance, and even you guys are telling me that wasn't the full WCW, and now I'm starting to see it. So I think it's just the whole negative, oh, this will put butts in seats, oh, we're going to fight them, we're going to do that, and that was just the nail in the coffin.
I think Vince said in an interview, he says, WCW were focusing on us and themselves. He says, we were just focusing on ourselves.
Yeah.
So they were doing double work, we didn't have to do much. So, as you say, that's completely right. Worry about your own problems, don't worry about somebody else's.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. And to be fair, that's how WWE, WWF, they just kept doing what they were doing, eventually found their way through it, and that's why they're still with us today, they're still the powerhouse, and it's hard to find anybody who's going to be close to them to the same way WCW are. We never know, you know, things could change, you know.
It is a shame, but because, I mean, we having competition, it makes it better, because there is a lot of things we could sit here and gripe about WWE. That's the only thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's... How many guys have we won WWE had for 10, 15 years now? We've seen them constantly. But
I mean, TNA made a brief push to try on the Monday to reunite the Monday Night Wars, but it just didn't have the same effect.
And Hogan went there and they went under. Surprise, surprise. So, coincidence.
It was the same effect. TNA at one point, again, like I said earlier, had a better roster, I think, than WWE. But again, they didn't utilise it, and that's how they're in this mess now.
Nope,
they've lost practically every major talent they've ever had.
Yep.
Like Gladby said about poor marketing, like TNA going to them were renowned for being bad at promoting house shows. Like people would run into AJ Styles in the town and not realise the show was going on, or people would run into Rob Van Dam or Kurt Angle and not realise they were still wrestling because few people knew about TNA.
And they based everything on Spike TV. Spike TV was going to save us all.
Now part of Channel 5.
Now with the challenge.
So yeah, that has been our summary on the events that led to the demise of WCW. If you're listening to us for the first time, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you take pictures of yourself watching the WWE Network, we are at Suplex Retweet. Our full back catalogue is available on both iTunes, Anchor, and a variety of podcasting sites. Go onto a podcasting site, search for us, you may find us. Otherwise, you won't, try another one. Again, Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet. Full back catalogue, including shows where we went through the full weekend of WrestleMania. We've done everything. We talked about 3MB. Come on. We have went the full scale. Next week on the show, we'll be moving away from WWE, WCW related things and focus back in our own backyard in Scotland, where we'll be previewing ICW Baramania. So we'll be talking about all the matches in that show. Plus, we'll have a snippet of the interview I have just done with ICW star Lionheart. So that's something to look forward to. So that's next week. But from the team here this week, I've been Stephen Wilson. I'd like to thank Steve Strack and Strack.
Thanks very much. And if you want to see what I tweeted to Mojo Riley, admin Twitter.
What's your handle?
Strackaconda.
Excellent. From the big dog, Alan McLucas.
Thanks very much, mate.
You want a Twitter plug?
McLucas Alan.
You're private, you can't plug yours.
I don't want weirdos adding me. do something, I'm really going to reply.
I'm going to be controversial here. I don't understand people that go on Twitter and make it private. So I want people to know what I'm talking about, but I don't want them to know.
Like a nosy neighbour.
No.
There's certain things that come up that you don't want.
Nah, cop out.
From Veronica's favourite son, Scott McLeod.
I'm glad to be finally be on the main show.
What's your handle, Scott?
At ScottMcLeod1996.
You also have a podcast, I'll let you plug it quickly.
Scott and Paul's Rambling Podcast at SP Rambling.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. From myself, Stephen Wilson, StephenW1192, and Quacky Radio EP.
Nobody wants my Twitter handle, I tweet rubbish.
He does.
We will see you next week, so till then, catch you later.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.